finally getting to the point of absolute, you know, rock bottom and having to build myself back together one piece at a time and deciding to create one little piece of art at a time, I rebuilt myself into the artist I am now 5 years later. I just think people need to realize, you know, whatever situation you're in right now, it's just one part of the story. It's just one page on a book. And there are so many other chapters that you haven't even written yet.
Welcome to The Optimistic Artist. I'm Monique Story, artist, creative entrepreneur, and whiskey enthusiast. I'm deeply passionate about helping artists find their possible by bringing the clarity, strategy, and inspiration you need to turn that art hobby of yours into a thriving art business. After many sold-out collections, I've learned a thing or two about marketing art whilst also thriving as a mum and creative. Marketing tips, productivity hacks, artist mindset, finances, failure. We cover it all as you hear from myself and other experts in the field. Whatever creative dreams you've got hidden in your heart, I am here to tell you it is possible. So get ready, my friend. This is The Optimistic Artist. Phoebe, thank you so much for being on the show and chatting to me. I feel really lucky that we get to have a little chat.
Oh, thanks.
So as an artist, I don't know about you, but the first question I always get asked is, so when did you start painting? And my answer usually is exactly the same time you did when you were about one. The difference is I didn't stop. So instead of asking you, when did you start painting? Mm-hmm. I guess I want to ask you, when did you stop painting and when did you start again?
I suppose I gradually stopped painting around the time that I went to university. There wasn't much encouragement for anyone to do fine art at a degree level. So it was like, well, you know, you did well at graphics and you did well at textiles and you enjoy photography, so those ones you can go and get a job at the end of. So which job do you want to be? And it was like, oh, I don't really want to be any of those. But you have to make a decision. And so I picked the one that looked like it would be the most creative and fun. And so that was textile design. But then as soon as that degree ended, and then I had to go and get a job because like actual real life knocked on my door and went, right, yes, this is it now. Unless you want to go and do a master's, which I didn't. I took a year wafting around doing, oh gosh, working in random places and things. And then eventually ended up pursuing education, like teaching. I guess at that point, things started to fizzle out as far as my own art practice went. And life just happened and yeah, sad, really.
So then what brought you back? Because obviously now I'm amazed at how prolific you are. It seems like every other day you're finishing a painting. So tell us about your journey and coming back.
I think I'm making up for lost time now. I feel really cross with myself for taking so much time away from something that I love so much. I think when I had my two boys, before my daughter was born, I started to do little bits of creative things here and there. I started to do little illustration sort of things. I think I started to realize that there was little bits of time. There wasn't huge time because my children decided that they would not enjoy sleeping at all ever. So I didn't really have much time at all, but I do remember like very occasionally there would be a pocket of an hour or so and I'd like, then I would do a little bit of something. And I realized then it was enjoyable and I liked it. But I think I did a few little markets maybe where I did print like little illustration-y things. But it was really just, I wasn't thinking, oh, I want to turn this into my career. And then I got pregnant with my third daughter and had her, and there's a lot of stuff that happened in between, mental health wise, which I have talked about before, but I struggled a lot with postnatal anxiety with my children and postnatal depression. So I'd had some really quite severe health issues, especially when I had my second boy. And I'd had like panic attacks, quite debilitating panic attacks. And so then I had my third child, my daughter, and my postnatal anxiety came back pretty badly, almost instantly. And it was like a physical thing, as well as the panic attacks. I had like these physical symptoms as well. And it was just really debilitating, like trying to parent three children and deal with this. And so then I, eventually did go back to the doctor, and I was convinced it was some sort of terrible neurological brain problem that I must have, some kind of degenerative disease, or I was convinced it was something quite like end of it. At the time, it was frightening. The fact that it was all very similar to what happened when my second son was tiny. We got to the point where it's probably anxiety again. And I just was completely burnt out, like completely exhausted from not sleeping really properly. And so it was like 7 years of cumulative sleep deprivation.
Yeah, killer.
Which really had taken its toll on me. So, yeah, I was just so exhausted. So to cut a long story short, yeah, I had to make some health priority changes to my mental health and my self-care and all of that. And my doctor was really good at telling me that was something that I needed to do, either with medication or before medication. So I decided to do it, to try to change my life a bit before, and if I needed medication to go down that road. But yeah, so I immediately decided that I needed to paint a bit more and also enroll my daughter into childcare, which I had resisted because I wanted to be that mum that does it all and is a stay-at-home mum. And we didn't really have the disposable income to do that, but my husband was like, look, we'll find the money because you need to have a break. So yeah. He was very supportive of that. So when she was about 20 months old, I went and bought some alcohol ink, which is something I had seen on Instagram, I think, and thought, yeah, that looks fun and that looks like something that I could do at the kitchen table and it wouldn't take up too much space and too much mess. And I remember doing like my first ever like little abstract painting, but I don't know, I looked at it and it felt so naive and it felt just not, I just didn't have the self-confidence at that point to pursue that. There was a voice in my head that said, you're not good enough at that. Nah, don't go down that road yet. And so that's why I chose, I think, subconsciously to go down the road of the alcohol inks, because there was a kind of like it, I wasn't using a brush and I wasn't trying to paint a picture. Most people now have seen alcohol ink art, but a lot of the time you're not touching the paper. So I think it was almost like I wasn't brave enough at that point to even touch the paper. I think it had been just so long and I just had this not any self-confidence left in myself. So I was really tentative and hesitant about doing anything. And I'm even surprised that I felt brave enough to post them and share them. But I think I just really liked what I'd created. It was quite different. And there's a kind of element of magicalness. It was very new.
Yeah.
So it was quite new then.
And I think something that's really important there is that you just started. There's a lot of creatives that for some reason, they let their creativity and they let their painting just slowly but surely peter out. I was the same. And when you go from maybe being really good at art at school or even at university, you stop and then you come back, it's scary. And there's all those, I'm not good enough. There's all those thoughts happening, but you just started.
Yeah.
And you started with something that was right for you at the time, but you didn't stick there. So I'm hearing you talk about doing art as a way to deal with your mental health issues. Mm. And first of all, thank you so much for sharing that, because there'll be a lot of people out there who are in the same boat. And I know that when you're in it, it's really hard to see what's going on. And so to have somebody else who's walked through it be able to explain what it was like for them, what this were, and how you came out of that, I think that's really invaluable. I went through a similar thing, actually, and it took a friend coming to visit me who had not seen me for years to say, whoa, something's going on here. Because when you're in it, it's almost like you don't realize it until it gets really bad. I guess I'm wondering, what was the tipping point for you? At what point did your art change from this hobby, where I guess doing it for mental health, to suddenly like being a money-making career?
I think it was a very slow tipping point. If you imagine a seesaw and I'm sitting at one end doing alcohol ink, and I just ever so gradually eked my way along the seesaw. And I can't really remember the point at which it tipped and it was, I'm on the other side. I went from alcohol ink to resin, another kind of fluid medium. I got asked to be a brand ambassador by a company, and that afforded me the luxury of being able to experiment with the product, because resin is very expensive for anyone that hasn't ever used it.
Yeah.
And because I had the luxury of basically they gave me resin as long as I promoted their product, and I started to then feel like I could experiment and create without kind of thinking, gosh, I've got to sell this because this stuff's really expensive. And so that, I think, fast forwarded me a little bit in the sense that then my skills got better quicker than probably they would have if I'd had to just rely on my own income to pay for the resin and then sell it. But yes, it's just started to get people say, oh, is that for sale? I'd like to buy one, or can I commission one? And then I think it was a point where my husband was like, you need to make a website. And then I suppose when I did my website, was when I thought, gosh, okay, wow, I've got a website now, so I guess this is a thing I'm doing. Still felt like it was like a part-time thing. I didn't at that stage really feel confident, oh, this is going to be something I can do as a career. I was still just thinking, this is great, I'm just going to ride this wave while it lasts. I'm going to do this while I can, because this is making a little bit of money and it's the only thing that I'm enjoying that I could do whilst I've got young children. And so, yeah, I ended up doing a group exhibition and then having a couple of other local exhibitions that I was part of. And then here in Wainui, where I live, every year there's a thing called the She Shed Tours, which is like a open studio tour. Sold a lot during that, and that was when I had enough money to pay for a studio to be built in our garden.
Oh my gosh, can we just pause there for a second? So you made enough money to build yourself a studio?
Yeah,
that's incredible.
I basically just scrawled this money away that I was making. I was really proud that was all done through my earnings, and then ironically literally then at that point was when I just started to lose my love for resin when I had the studio. Yeah, it was just becoming like more and more difficult for me to find enjoyment in it. Forced me to suddenly ask myself the question, what do you really want to do? But at that point, then I was like, oh, but I've got an income from this. I don't want to have to start all over again. And I'd built up quite a big following just from that resin. Because again, this was back before Instagram changed, and I would put up a process video and it would get hundreds of thousands of views, and then I would get all these people following me, and I just thought, well, if I stop doing resin, like, what's going to happen? Do I have to start a new Instagram account? What do I do? So I didn't really know what to do. So I think I took that first year sort of gradually phasing out the resin over the first few months. And then I just thought, no, I just need to stop and focus on painting. And I got the opportunity to do a solo exhibition. And so I thought, I'll just throw myself into painting and just do paintings for that. And then, yeah, the response from those paintings was good enough that I thought, well, okay, I've got a bit more confidence now in my painting ability. So gradually over that year, the momentum of selling paintings built up. My Instagram followers did drop, and then I stagnated for a long time, and I was finding I was losing double the amount of followers that I was gaining. But I just had to not care about that and go, doesn't matter, that is what it is, and these people are not for me, I'm not for them, and if they don't like this, that's fine, and then make space for the people that do like what I'm doing now. So yeah,
I think what I love about social media is that essentially we get to choose our audiences. You get to choose your audience by how you show up. So if you want an audience on social media that really resonates with who you truly are, then you need to show up as you truly are. And I think that's really brave to be able to change styles and be true to who you are, because there's always this fear of, this is what's worked in the past. This is what's sold in the past. I can't possibly deviate away from that or sometimes artists get told to just stick with one style and make it work, don't deviate. But I know for myself, there's a whole abstract style that I never would have discovered and explored had I not had that courage to do what I really wanted to do. So that's really amazing. Mm. Do you think there was a mind shift at some point where you saw yourself as hobbyist versus business owner?
Yeah, probably. I can't pinpoint exactly when it happened, though. I think I allowed myself a lot of room to just play and explore and not be driven by outcome a lot at the beginning. And I really tried to make sure that I didn't focus on, I've got to make a painting that I've got to sell. And I think now I do a lot of playing and exploring, but I'm much more intentional about, right, okay, I need a body of work for an exhibition, or I need a body of work for a collection. So I need to intentionally decide what my theme is or how many pieces I'm going to do. And then I treat it's like, that's work, that's a job. I need to create these pieces. And so I think that's the difference, because as things progressed and I decided to do exhibitions or shows and things like that, those gave me a kind of goal to work towards and an end point to work towards.
I love that you are still creating space for play. Mm. So obviously when you see your art practice as a business, you do have to be intentional and you have to, I guess, make some intentional decisions. But I love that you still created space for play, because we do need to still be growing and developing.
Definitely.
And play is such an important part of that. Now, for our listeners, if you know Phoebe, then you'll know that she has ADHD, because she just shares so beautifully and so authentically. And when I surveyed both of our audiences, there were a lot of people that really wanted to know more what it's like being a creative business owner who is also neurodivergent. So I guess I'd love to hear, and I know a lot of people would love to hear your journey in discovering that you have ADHD and what it's been like for you.
Okay, so there's a lot of questions in that. A lot of questions in that question, Monique. You'll have to keep me on track. We'll cycle back to when I was talking about having two young children. And so during that time, when I was having the panic attacks, it was pointed out to me by my oldest preschool teacher that he was displaying some different sort of traits to some of the other children. And she was very lovingly said, you might want to just, before he goes to school, get an assessment done to see whether or not he is fitting on the spectrum of autism or ADHD. At this point, I had no idea really about either of those things. I remember driving home after this lady said this to me and crying with my son in the back. But it wasn't tears of sadness. It was actually tears of relief, because I knew that he was different. And I just was so pleased to have kind of direction now to go in. It kind of transpired that he fell on the spectrum of having both of those. But ADHD was the sort of part of the symptoms that he was displaying that were causing quite a lot of challenges. I don't want to say difficulties in the sense that I didn't know what I was doing. That's difficult, but like, not he was difficult. He was challenging because I didn't understand him. And it was, you don't get a manual when you're a parent anyway, do you? You go into it completely clueless and then throw in some sort of neurodivergent traits and it's even more fumbling in the dark. So I just went on a complete hyper-focus, like, I need to find out everything about this so that I really empower myself with this knowledge, because I want to help him. But bearing in mind, this is all happening at the same time as I've got severe postnatal anxiety and sleep deprived and a baby. And so it was a really challenging few years of my life. And that's why I have limited memories of this whole time, because I just had to do it one foot in front of the other, kind of literally in survival mode. Anyway, we got through it, sort of went through just being a mum of someone with ADHD. And then my second son was struggling at school. His teachers were saying, he's such a bright boy and he's got all this knowledge, but he's really struggling to get it down on paper, or he's really struggling to stay on task, and he's constantly distracted, but he's such a kind boy and he's no trouble, and all these things that you don't associate with ADHD at all. Because most people think ADHD, hyper boy in the classroom, rocking on his chair and making a lot of noise and shouting. And so I happened to have an appointment with my oldest son at the psychiatrist, and I mentioned to him about my son, and he just looked at me and said, bring him in. At that time, doing all that research about inattentive ADHD, that's like when the penny started to drop and I realized, oh, everything that I'm reading here about this sort of type of ADHD seems to be exactly how I have always been. And it was at that point that I was like, oh, it all makes sense now. Everything makes sense.
Yeah.
My whole life makes sense. And you have this kind of epiphany where you like look back on your life and all of these confusing, difficult times and all this shame that you've carried inside, is just this light is shone on it. Oh, there you go. Actually, you're a completely different person to who you thought you should be. And the whole of my life, I'm there trying to fit into this mold. And I liken it to a square peg trying to fit into a round hole. I think I read somewhere, you basically spend your whole life shaving off all of the corners of yourself to make yourself into this hole, when actually there's just a square hole that you didn't know existed.
Yeah, I love that. I often hear people refer to ADHD as a superpower, and I wonder, and it would be really good to hear your perspective, if that can diminish the challenges that come with it.
Yeah, I actually think it can be quite damaging to call it a superpower, because it certainly does come with a lot of challenges. I think the reason people do that is because there are many traits of it that can be very positive when they're channeled in the right direction. So hyperfocus, for instance, is a trait of ADHD, where you can focus on something you're interested in intensely for a very long period of time, and you can get really good at that thing quicker than it seems like other people can, and you can stay on focused on it for a lot longer than other people can. And a lot of people can say, oh, that's just like the flow state, and everybody goes into that, but it's like more intense than the flow state, and it's just to the point where it can become a deficit, because you can forget about everything else that's important in your life, such as your family or things that you're supposed to do, or bodily functions, eating, sleeping, all these things. So I can see why people would say it's a superpower, because on one hand, it looks like, wow, you can focus for 10 hours doing that thing that you love. That's amazing. But it comes at a price. There are many things about it which are incredible and worth celebrating, for sure. But there are things which are debilitating. Basically, the prefrontal cortex of your brain is not as well developed as somebody who's neurotypical. So the signals are not getting to the other parts of your brain in the same way that they are in someone else, which means your working memory isn't as good. Your working memory is part of your memory which remembers short-term things. You've got your car keys in your hand and you're about to leave the house, and you do something and you put your car keys down, and then you look in your hand for your car keys because you think they were there and they're not there. And now you have no idea where your car keys are. And yes, everybody does this. I get that. Everybody does this. And this is what people always say about ADHD. Oh, but everybody does that. Everybody has blips. But imagine if that happened every day, every single time you did that activity or that thing. And this is the difference. It's magnified. All these little issues, they're all magnified, they're all amplified, and they happen much more frequently in someone with ADHD. To answer your question, I think it can be empowering to choose as a person. Yes, ADHD is a superpower to me when I use it to create my art. But that's me choosing to say that's a superpower. but don't you tell me that it's a superpower without living in my shoes and knowing all the struggles that go with it as well.
Thank you so much for sharing in so much detail, because I think that really sheds a lot of light on what it's actually like, because I have often heard that phrase. And I mean, I don't know, but I've often wondered whether that phrase, even though it might be meant to sound helpful, actually diminishes the struggles with ADHD. I love the way that you are able to be really real about the challenges and be really real about the opportunities that you can harness it, but it's your choice to make. Okay, so I can't not ask you about your Instagram, because you are close to 100,000 followers and you did a reel the other week that just went viral. Mm-hmm. I think at the time it had 5 million views. I don't know what it's up to now.
It's 9.1 million now. 9.1 million.
That is just insane. Tell us about Instagram, how you got started and what role it plays in your art business.
So how I got started, I think I had an Instagram just kind of, you know, sharing pictures of my kids and cup of coffee or whatever you normally do when you just first get Instagram back in the day when it came out. And when I started to do these little illustration-y things again, I decided to start a new one and I gave it a completely different name. I won't even say what the name was. It was nothing to do with me. So anybody that actually knew me would never find it or know it was associated with me. And so, yeah, when I started out, I did do, you know, quite a bit of sharing on that under this different name. Once I started doing the alcohol ink and started to create kind of regularly, I decided to change it. And I changed it then to Phoebe.artist, which was like, ooh, I'm going to call myself artist. Which felt quite brave, but again, it didn't have my surname or anything like that. I kept it at that for quite a long time until eventually I thought, no, I need to take this a bit more seriously and call it my name, Phoebe Gander Art. So it's had a few different iterations. It really was at the beginning just a lovely kind of escape from my reality, and which was, you know, living in a little sleepy town on the edge of New Zealand. And I really did crave a connection beyond being a mum. I found that I had just lost my identity completely. Didn't really know who I was anymore. Didn't know. I just felt like there's nothing else interesting about me. And yet when I was on Instagram, I thought, no, I can be an artist, you know? And I met these people and started to message people, and we'd have little chats and conversations, and my world just sort of expanded in such a different way. And I just, this access to all these people and all these ideas and all this inspiration that I hadn't really known existed before. People give Instagram a bad rap, but it changed my life in such a positive way back then that I can't fault it in any way back then, because it allowed me to make all these connections with other people that were in a similar situation all over the world. And, you know, some of those people I still message today and consider friends. So I found it at the beginning like a really amazing kind of support for my own journey, I think, healing journey. I know that sounds a bit cliched, but instrumental, I think, in helping me kind of discover that I was more than just a mum. Because I suppose it's partly that, what's the word? I forgot the word. You know, when you get the validation of other people saying, yes, I like this, and wow, your art is great. And I know we shouldn't put too much emphasis on outside validation, but I think at that stage, you know, my self-confidence was so low that was amazing for some to have a random stranger say that they liked something I made. That did give me a confidence boost, and it did help me feel better about myself.
There kind of is a healing journey that comes when you become a mother. And I know that can sound really hard, but, you know, both things can be true. We can absolutely love our kids and be for them and be struggling at the same time.
Definitely.
And I don't know if people acknowledge what a massive shift motherhood is, because you lose so much of yourself.
Yeah.
you lose your body, you lose your career, you lose your identity, or not so much that you lose it, but it shifts.
Yeah.
And it's almost like there is a period of mourning that needs to happen. And I think that's really healthy, and that's really okay to mourn those things that have shifted and changed. And it's almost like only then can we re-emerge and come home to ourselves and come home to a better version of ourselves.
I just wish it was more talked about, you know, because it's something that I feel like we all as mothers go through. And yet it's almost like this thing that's not acknowledged publicly. And I like, why?
Maybe there's an expectation that we're supposed to be completely fulfilled and unchanged, that every part of our being is supposed to be recognized in the role of motherhood. And for some people it is, but I also think it's okay if it's not. Like for me, it wasn't. I loved being a mum. We waited a long time before I could be a mum, so we're really happy about it. But at the same time, there was all these other parts of my identity that weren't being fulfilled and that couldn't be outworked in the context of motherhood. Yeah. And I think pursuing a career as an artist is such a beautiful way to kind of come home to yourself if you are naturally a creative person. And with things like Instagram and social media, it's an inanimate object, you know. It's if it's damaging to us, then it's about us. It's about how we are interacting. It's about how we are showing up. And I think what you did really well is you chose how you were showing up on social media, and you chose how you were interacting with it, and you used Instagram to create a really life-giving community for you.
You just need to be intentional about how you use it and why you're using it.
I had a lot of people wanting to know what your why was. Because obviously when you're running a business as an artist, like lots of the time it's great, it's fun and we're painting, but there's also a lot of other stuff involved. There's a lot of admin and the framing and the organizing. And so what keeps you going when it gets really hard?
For me, the only real thing that I, you know, find fulfillment and joy and pleasure continually in is creating art. And so I just feel very, very lucky that I realized that, and that to kind of have the support from my husband, because I have to say that that is integral to how I've succeeded. I would say now that I'm earning a salary that's comparable to a job that, like, you know, if I was to go out in the workforce, it's the same, similar salary spread out over a year that I'm earning now. But, you know, for the first 4 or 5 years, it wasn't. But I think of those as the training years. You know, they were like, if I had gone back to university, persistence has paid off. And I think, you know, there's a lot to be said for just being persistent at something. When you love it, it's easy to be persistent. But it's very hard if you don't love it.
Which is why I think as artists, showing up authentically is so important. Because if you're doing work that you don't love, or you're showing up on social media in a way that's not true to you, it's going to get too hard to not give up.
And I think that's why people, you know, they give up, because they haven't actually tapped into the source of what really lights them up or who they really are. And if you're trying to be someone else, you can do it for a while. You can copy a style and do that for a while, but eventually it's going to get boring. And what people do often is that they walk away before realizing that they could actually just try something else. And that, and you know, that's what I did with the alcohol ink, is that I got kind of bored of that and I pivoted to resin. And at the end of that resin reaching its peak, I suppose, I could have at that point walked away and gone, do you know what? Maybe this isn't for me. Maybe I just should go back and retrain and be a, I don't know, whatever else. But I didn't. I just was like, I'm going to keep going, because I can still feel the call, the pull towards creating art is in me. And I just haven't quite figured out exactly what it is that I want to make yet. And, you know, also that is ever evolving and will change probably forever and ever until I take my last breath.
Yeah.
I think people think they need to arrive. And if they don't arrive at this place of feeling 100% like this is it, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life, then they should give up, and because there's no point. But the thing is, accepting that this is where I am for now, and this is what I love for now, and it might change, and that is okay. And I just need to persistently show up as consistently as I possibly can. That's enough. That's enough to make it as an artist.
Yeah, so we just need to normalize this idea of pivoting, because you're right, you could have given up. And no one wakes up one day and they're living the exact dream life, creating their exact dream art. You know, we just get there one step at a time. Yes. And when there's an unrealistic expectation that we're just going to suddenly be living the way that we want to live, creating the art we want to have, having the success in the community that we want to have overnight, then if that's your perspective and that's your expectation, then you probably will give up, because that's just not reality.
Yeah, you will. And that's exactly what I did. If I really think back to when I left university, and, you know, I thought, well, I can't be a painter, so I may as well not paint. I may as well not create at all. And then I didn't for like 10 plus years, because I was so black and white about it. It was all or nothing. And then finally getting to the point of absolute, you know, rock bottom, and having to build myself back together one piece at a time, and deciding to create one little piece of art at a time, I rebuilt myself into the artist I am now, 5 years later. There's no way you could have gone back to me in 2017 and said, okay, paint a still life now. Like, I just didn't have it in me, because I wasn't ready to be painting like that. I needed to go through all of the things that I've been through in the past 5 years to get to today. And you can't rush it, you know.
And nothing is wasted. You know, all of those little experiences, even though they didn't necessarily pan out, you're not doing that resin art now, none of those experiences are wasted, because in those moments, that's where you learn everything you need to learn to set you up for what's next. And what would you say to someone who is at that stage?
I would say, if you don't know what to pivot into, just pick the next thing. Pick the next thing that's interesting to you, and do that, and do it because you're interested in the process. I think this is what people fixate on far too much, is the outcome, and they don't pay enough attention to what interests them in the process part of making art, because that's what it is. The process of creating the art is 100% where the enjoyment comes from.
Yeah.
And so if you are doing art because you are focusing on the outcome, you are losing out. You're missing out on all of the joy that you are going to get, and all of the healing, and all of the, you know, satisfaction, all of the pleasure that comes from the creating of the art. And so try something. If you don't enjoy the process, bin it. You know, move on, find the next thing. Must be infinite ways to create art. So just keep going until you find the thing that lights you up, and that you want to keep doing it again and again and again and again.
Love it. Okay, I'm going to do some quick fires, and then we really want to hear what's next for you, because I know you've got some exciting things in the pipeline. Okay, quick fire. Are you ready?
Okay, go on then.
What are you obsessed with at the moment?
Taking photos of glasses and vases with the sunlight on them. That's my thing at the moment. My camera roll is just full of them.
Favorite studio snack?
I think I quite like a cup of tea with some little, a few chocolate almonds or some Maltesers, Tim Tam.
What do you listen to while you paint?
Podcasts normally, or audiobooks. I don't often listen to music unless I just feel like I've had enough podcasts, and then I might pick something like some sort of classical music or piano music. But yeah, normally I'm listening to podcasts.
What's one thing that wasn't supposed to, but has made its way into your studio and is now forever a studio item? For example, I have many a mugs that were not supposed to, but like now they're studio mugs. They're covered in paint, or tea towels.
Well, all of that. Yep. Mugs, tea towels. Most of my wardrobe.
Yes.
I have like pile of, I call it the pile of shame in the corner, which is jumper, trousers, t-shirts, basically all of the clothes that I have ruined wearing in the studio that wasn't actually supposed to be in the studio. But even these jeans I've got on today, these were supposed to be not studio jeans because I have, you know, several pairs of studio jeans. But, you know, whoops, I've just gone, it popped into the studio quickly. Oh no, I've sat down on some paint and I've got paint on these. So they are now studio. So yeah, lots of clothes that have ended up in the studio pile of shame.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. Okay, so tell us about what's next for you.
So at the moment, I'm working on an online course that will be released at some point. There's going to be two parts. The sort of first course that I wanted to do was about colour. So it's going to be a kind of introduction to colour theory, colour mixing, and just sort of explaining how I mix colours and helping people kind of understand colour theory in a kind of simple way, I suppose, because there's lots of information out there. But I felt that it can all be a bit confusing and conflicting. And I just thought, well, if I put it together in the way that is, you know, makes sense to me, and then it's all in one place and then people can kind of learn all these basic skills. And I think if you just can get those skills under your belt, then you can go ahead and create with a lot more confidence. So yeah, I just thought it would be a really good entry point.
That's really exciting.
So of course, we'll be released in two parts. So there'll be the basic sort of colour mixing, and then there'll be the second part, which is a little bit more in depth into kind of creating your own palette and things like that. So depends on level of experience.
Okay, exciting. So where is the best place for people to go if they want to get stuck into it?
So yeah, they would want to sign up to my newsletter. And to do that, you can just basically go to my website, which is phoebegando.com. And there's a little pop-up box that comes up as soon as you go on the website that just says, join my mailing list, I think. And you just need to enter your name and your email address there. And yeah, and you'll be signed up to my newsletter. And then when I finally do have a release date, I will send it out on there first.
Amazing. So, well, thank you so much for chatting to me, and thank you for being so open and vulnerable. I think that's really powerful. I think there are people listening who will feel seen and heard by you sharing your story.
Oh, thank you.
So before you go, as I've been thinking about this interview, I've got this picture in my mind of a field of flowers that are just white and boring and not flourishing. And I see you as this flower that's completely different, and as you give yourself freedom to grow in the way that you are created to grow, with colors and long petals and short petals and this way and that way and leaves all different shapes, like as you really step into who you are and as you show up the way that you do, which is just so authentically and naturally, what happens is I see the other flowers around you sort of look at you, and you're giving them permission to be themselves.
Oh, that's lovely.
And slowly but surely, as you are yourself, you're actually giving other people the confidence to be themselves and to step into who they are called to be, which is really beautiful. So I think you're doing an amazing thing. I think you're a really valuable part of the art community.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I mean, gosh, I think it's just so, it is sort of like, it feels like a role that I never knew I would step into all those years ago. I couldn't have believed it. So, you know, I just think people need to realize, you know, whatever situation you're in right now, it's just one part of the story. It's just one page on a book, and there are so many other chapters that you haven't even written yet, where the story is just going to get so much more incredible. But you just need to keep going and believe in yourself. And I think, yeah, I really wish that I had not felt so sort of ashamed to be who I was all those years ago, and determined to try and be a different version of who I was actually supposed to be. So I think by speaking up and sharing my story, I hopefully can save somebody out there from feeling that same sort of sense of shame. I think it was Nanette Gadsby who said on a podcast recently, you know, when she discovered she had autism, it was an exfoliation of shame. And I just loved that, because that's kind of how I felt. It's like, it just, you can just take this heavy coat off, chuck it away and go, no, you know what? I don't have to be that version of me anymore. I'm this version. And then tomorrow I might be a different version again, you know. But it's important, you know, we have just such a blink of an eye of existence here. And I just hate the thought of people kind of living their lives in this shadow version of themselves, and they can just step into the full, beautiful, floral glory that they actually are.
The best way forward is one step at a time. And by listening today, you just took one more step in the direction of your dreams. If you're looking for more, head on over to moniquestory.com. That's story with an EY. There you can get your hands on today's show notes and heaps of other free resources. Okay, until next time, go and find your possible.